This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Many thanks to the legendary Tim Bure, who knows all when it comes to Notre Dame and Clemson. We appreciate his time in hour number one. Speaking of knowing all, Wes, it is time, a little later than the week than normal, but always a pleasure, nevertheless.
I like it.
Tom Luginbill joins us, and there's Lugs. Lugs, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. We got to create a late week spike in the ratings.
Is that what it is? Yep, there it is. Yeah. Just like that. Just like that. Snap the fingers. Hey, just like that.
Wait a second. Wait, you know what this is? This goes back to the fact that Lugs is one of the founding members of whatever Packer and Durham do together on radio or television or whatever. Lugs is one of those founding pillars of our community, Packer, and we have to respect that. For better or for worse, Tom Luginbill is a part of our culture, right?
Yes.
I am your foundation to the house of cards that you guys live in.
That would that's pretty accurate.
Sure. You bet.
I'd say that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, your time is short, so let's get right to it. Clemson, Notre Dame this weekend. The Tigers are really banged up. There's huge anticipation, obviously, 1 versus 4. But on the defensive side in particular, Tom, it is not only next man up, but you're going to get a dose of the best offensive line you're going to play all season long. And Notre Dame wants to run it, and they're going to test your manhood right from the get-go.
They are. The question is going to be is if Clemson has success versus the run game, does Notre Dame have the weapons on the perimeter to test them in the back end? We've seen Clemson have some lapses, give up some explosives, but I don't know if the personnel from Notre Dame is going to create a scare for Brent Venables on defense on the back end. So much of this, I think, is predicated upon what's Notre Dame's answer if they're not able to just run it at will or run it to the level they've become accustomed to running it to. And listen, guys, I don't know about you, but I don't really think we know all that much about Notre Dame yet. This is the fourth-ranked team in the country. They've beaten six teams that have accounted for 12 wins. 12 wins, all right? So I think we're going to find out a lot more about just where Notre Dame actually is in the hierarchy of the conference as it relates to national polls, because what we've seen so far has come against people that they are clearly better than, that they should have clearly won the game and did so. So this week, I think, is an entirely different animal for Notre Dame.
Tom, you bring up a point, and I kind of got into this a couple days ago when Roddy Jones was with me about, I expect this game, and I just kind of said it with Tim Bure, I expect this game to be like 8 in the box for both schools, and then Brian Kelly and Dabo Swinney basically saying, hey, DJ, hey, Ian Book, go beat me throwing the ball vertically. With DJ, you kind of know he can throw it vertically. You're just not quite sure outside of Amari Rodgers maybe who's going to be the consistent playmaker going vertical. Mm-hmm. With Notre Dame, let's be honest, they live in that 8 to 13-yard box right now. They don't live in a ball that's thrown 20 or more yards down the field, seemingly.
No, they don't. And you can make an argument that their biggest playmaker is a freshman tight end in Michael Mayer. And he is a matchup problem. I will say that. And they're going to use him. And I think that Ian Book's willing to take risks with him because of the size advantages. It's almost like a Gronkowski type of situation where there's an established trust there. You know, I felt last week, and you mentioned DJ and, you know, what he's capable of versus what they want to allow him to do or the positions they want him to be in. I thought last week Clemson did a really, really good job of limiting the negatives that could happen on passing downs. Everything was short. Everything was underneath. It was a one read. Get the ball out of your hands. Don't screw it up. And then as the game unfolded, he became a little bit more comfortable. You saw them take a few more chances down the field. He made a couple of throws. But really, it was about handing the ball off, being a part of the run game as a designated runner, and then just making the throws that are there in front of him. This time, you're going on the road versus a really good football team. You're coming off of a week where you have now established this expectation and this standard of excellence at quarterback, And it's an entirely different week psychologically for DJ than it was last week going into the Boston College game. And as I've said for you guys, to you guys many a times, if you're going to beat Clemson, you're going to have to play your best game, and Clemson's going to have to do something to help you. Well, last week, Boston College probably played as good as they possibly could. Clemson helped them a lot, and they still couldn't beat Clemson. So what gives this week?
Right. All right, so let me just allow you to be the ultimate expert, which, of course, we knew you were before you joined us. When Notre Dame has the ball, what is the key matchup to watch? I mean, is it Book? Is it Williams? Is it the tight end? Is it maybe a blocking scheme? You tell me. So when Notre Dame has the ball, the key matchup is what, Tom? And I'm going to ask you the same thing when Clemson has the ball.
Clemson's corners on the outside versus Notre Dame's personnel on the outside. Can Clemson force this game defensively to be played between the numbers or between the hashes? Because I don't think Notre Dame breaks the huddle with personnel on the perimeter that makes Clemson go, oh boy, we better not match up on an island with this guy. I think they feel confident doing that. So condensing the game into a middle of the field game. Now listen, that's going to happen. You're going to see heavy run game, heavy play action with the tight end targeted. But if you remove the perimeter and the outer portions of the field, I think that's advantageous for Clemson.
All right, the flip side. Clemson's got
Tom,
the ball.
Is this game?
What's the flip side to that?
Go ahead.
Clemson's got the ball, so what's the key matchup Notre Dame wants?
Forcing DJ to have to work through progressions. Get him – don't take away the quick throw if you can, or at least make it a tight window. Make him have to go from A to B to C to check down, whatever it may be, and read the defense. Actually do something that, all right, you'd expect a junior or a senior to do. I don't think you can just give him easy one-read throws and think you're going to be successful. He's still a freshman. I think he, at some point, will have a freshman moment, whether it's a fumble or a poor execution in the red area, or he turns the ball over, throws it into a crowd. At some point or another, you need to force those plays if you're Notre Dame on defense.
But to be honest with you, Luke, he had that freshman moment last week when he tried to hand it to Travis Etienne at the goal line and put it in his neck and not in his belly, right?
It was crazy, right? I mean, you're sitting there and you're looking. First of all, Etienne doesn't take it correctly. And then DJ puts it up into his neck. You're 100% correct. And listen, those are mesh point things. Haven't worked with the same guys all the time. I think those are more reps-related things. But I'm talking about processing. Okay. I'm talking about things where you've got to really understand the moving parts and the things that are happening post-snap and going through all those things. Things that generally require a fair amount of experience. And again, I thought the coaching staff did a wonderful job last week of limiting dangerous moments for him. And then he did a really good job of playing within himself, doing what was asked of him and taking what the defense gives him. I think that Notre Dame has to not give him anything, force him to have to, you know, go through progressions and maybe do it under duress. And now all of a sudden you throw a ball late over the middle or to the outside and create a turnover or a mistake by not giving him anything easy.
Okay, I want to go back to this Notre Dame offense, Clemson defense scenario, because there's a lot about me that thinks Saturday night for Notre Dame becomes two tights, one back, you know, two receivers, and that's kind of the way Notre Dame's going to go just in their base stuff. But when Clemson is as beat up as they are defensively, right, no Skalski, no Mike Jones, no Tyler Davis up front, Xavier Thomas misses the first half because of a targeting call last week, I'm thinking of Brazee, Murphy, all these guys, Pinckney, all these guys you've told us are, you know, as the great Paul Johnson once said, all come highly recommended, right? They go to this stage for the first time. How critical is the big moment, not for DJ offensively, but for Brazee, for Murphy, for all these kids, young guys who are going to go put their hand on the field turf at Notre Dame Stadium and try and slow down what the Irish really want to do?
I don't think it's about talent and experience. I think it is about, your ability to play the proper techniques. I think sometimes with freshmen and young guys, and listen, Miles Murphy, Brian Brees, this crew, Trenton Simpson's now getting in on the action. They've now played a lot of football. But when you've got young players and you're playing on the road and you're playing against an offense that can lean on you and wants to demoralize you, I think it becomes more about technique, gap responsibility, playing off of blocks. Listen, those guys might be young, but they're better defensively along the front, even with injuries, than anybody Notre Dame has played to this point. So maybe, just maybe, talent rules the day for Clemson, because it's a unit that Notre Dame hasn't seen in terms of overall value and depth. And remember, guys, going back to the early portion of the season, Wake Forest, Citadel, the entire second half of both of those games, literally Clemson cleared the bench. And they cleared the bench for moments like this, where you got to have some guys step up. And now instead of throwing them on the field and they've played three snaps, you've thrown them on the field and they've played 35 snaps or they've played 40 snaps.
Do you get a sense that Ian Book and Notre Dame can win a high-scoring game?
The only way I think that that can happen is if Clemson has distinct voids in the back end and they give up explosive plays that result in points. Not just explosive plays where you're tackled and now, you know, you've gained 30 or 40 yards, but you still got to extend the drive. I think that Notre Dame's going to have to manufacture explosive plays that result in points. If they can't do that, it does not help them to get into a track meet. I think Notre Dame knows exactly who they are and who they are not. And in playing to their strengths, this is about running the clock, keeping Clemson on the sideline, getting in third and short, and continuing to move the chains. If Notre Dame gets off schedule, guys, in the sense that they find themselves in second and eight, then all of a sudden have an incompletion on an obvious passing down, they go to third and eight, that's where Notre Dame's going to get out of their comfort zone. That does not help them.
All right, here's the obligatory Trevor Lawrence question before we go to break. Mm-hmm. We had this conversation with Andrea Adelson yesterday. Can you explain to me how Trevor is no longer a Heisman favorite when he was out of a ball game with the coronavirus?
No, I cannot explain that in any way, shape, or form. And I think it's going to have to just somehow play itself out. All of a sudden, Justin Fields plays two games, and it doesn't matter that the previous 4 weeks actually were played on the field in live games, in live action. That's a head-scratcher to me. And listen, is that how it's going to play out going forward? Probably not. I think a lot of that's going to shift and change over the next few weeks. And keep in mind, guys, what's happened to Wisconsin, that's not going to be exclusive to Wisconsin. We're seeing news out of the West Coast with Cal in their opener right now. No room for error. Just think about this for a moment. This has happened to Clemson. Very fortunate. Clemson's got tremendous depth, all right, at quarterback and high-profile players. Can you imagine what happens to Ohio State if this happens to Justin Fields? And now all of a sudden you take him off the field from that team, or if this happened to Alabama and you took Mac Jones off the field for that team, we don't know how all of this would affect these other teams. I don't think it would be a positive outcome. So far, Clemson's 1-0, and I think for my money, they're going to be 2-0 with this. How many other teams do you think could say that in college football with their schedule and no room for error and no ability to make up games?
Well, the good news, and I'm looking for good news, and we mentioned it earlier, given the fact that Louisville and Virginia have postponed their game to play next week, is at least the ACC has a flexibility schedule where, hey, there's a chance that you can figure out another spot. The Big Ten has zero room for error. Pac-12, zero room for error, and you're already seeing it. And that is a problem, to the point that even dogs agree.
Well, so Bob the Dog and Clark Kent are not happy with management, who should know better, from parking my Jeep right outside my office window right now. And the boys, a.k.a. Chester and Fuller, are not happy about it.
Well, my boys are being well-behaved. Of course, they're sound asleep because they've gotten an hour of the show already under their belt. But your dogs, again, wound up and wired and ready to go, whole different story.
Totally different story. Look at Wes shaking his head.
Yeah, cat lover. That's exactly right.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Segment number two with Tom Luginbill. As we understand, got a note from my management. Ratings continue to spike this hour. Coincidence? Luke says no.
I don't think so.
Yep, there it is.
I think he'll be here for the rest of the hour, Pack. Is that right? We've been able to extend it all the way through the rest of the hour.
That is not correct. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Your boy Josh there taking some liberties. But here's the problem with the spike in the ratings. It's like the little minor guy, right? On Price is Right. And then if you do it too far, right off the edge of the cliff. And that's what happens when I join you guys. Yep. So don't be stretching this thing too long.
Okay, got it. All right, real quick, hashtag Maction for you last night. That's all I'm going to say. Hashtag Maction. Had a little Maction, little 6-game Maction going on last night for you. Got the ball in the air didn't you? You and Denise were throwing it all over the place.
All the teams in the league. I love the Mac, and here's the reason why. And I've probably done over 100 Mac games over the last 15 years. You could take every single one of those teams and switch their uniforms. Put Toledo's uniforms on Miami of Ohio, and Central's on Bowling Green. And the only thing that's different is the quarterback. They are literally all mirror images of each other. And that's why every game – they're playing with the same caliber athlete, the same exact player, and that's why it's such a quarterback-driven league. That's what makes it great. Dan LeFevre's at Central Michigan. All right, they're the best team. Roethlisberger's at Miami. They're the best team. Gronkowski's at Toledo. They're the best team. It's like, it's hilarious. It's just one after another.
That's tremendous. I bring us back to the ACC a second? Because
that's Wes's fault. Wes did that.
The minor just went crashing into the basement, for crying out loud. Phil Jurkovec, speaking of quarterback play, the guy's been tremendous. Right. And you mentioned how well BC played last week, especially the first half. Could not have scripted it any better for Jeff Hafley.
Yeah.
Man, they've got themselves a dude. And, you know, they've got also good skill people on the outside, too. Maybe underrated, not to mention a terrific tight end, good offensive line, David Bailey. Jeff Hafley and the boys are really building something nice there, aren't they? It's a good look.
It's a really good look, and it's fun to watch them and say, oh, my gosh, these guys have some explosive elements. You know, we're talking about, where's that guy for Notre Dame? Notre Dame doesn't have a Zay Flowers. I mean, who would have thought that? I mean, their guys make plays. I think the scheme is really, really good. And the quarterback, he just – now, it's funny because when you watch him now, it ain't always pretty. Now, there's going to be moments where you're like, ugh. But the ball gets to where it's supposed to get. He makes plays with his legs, and there seems to be this confidence in his ability to make people around him better. But this is a good football team, and like I said, they played out of sight for most of the game, and Clemson helped them. And at the end of the day, they ran out of gas. The team with the better places and players and more horses in the stable won the race, but the future is bright in Chestnut Hill. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
All right, let's stay on the quarterback bend, but I want to go to Chapel Hill for a moment because, and I had this conversation earlier in the week with someone about, we started this year with Trevor Lawrence, Sam Howell. It's the way we started the rotation and the ranking in the ACC. Even in the summer, mm-hmm. we're talking with you about quarterbacks. It was Trevor Lawrence, Sam Howell. Sam Howell's been pretty good, but has he been what we thought he would be? And is it fair for us to have a higher expectation of Sam Howell, or is that something we created?
I think we created that through the offseason and through the unexpected success of a year ago with a lot of people not seeing that coming. And, you know, you're a true freshman. You have a remarkable year. Remember, we saw the same hype happen with Trevor Lawrence off of his remarkable freshman year. The difference is the team around Trevor Lawrence was so much further along in the other areas that matter than this team is. So Sam Howell's doing this a little bit more on his shoulders. Listen, this team goes by two things. If they run the ball well, and if they stop the run. If you look at their losses and their wins, they have really struggled when they haven't been able to run the football effectively and when they've given up huge chunk plays on the ground, which is exactly what happened last week. And the offensive line was challenged. I thought Sam Howell actually played a good game. Couldn't run the football, couldn't stop the run. That was ultimately the difference in the ballgame. I mean, North Carolina was 6 of 10 on third down. All right, you got to like that number. Their average yards for pass per attempt was huge, so they're getting their explosives. But the bottom line is, for North Carolina right now, I think it comes down to those two things. When they run the ball, when they can stop the run, depending on which week it is, they're pretty tough, and they're pretty tough to beat.
Tom, amazingly, Virginia Tech this weekend is a 2-touchdown favorite as an unranked team against the 25th-ranked team in the country, a team in-state in Liberty. And good for Hugh Freeze. Nice story, but come on. They're not the 25th-best team in America. But Hendon Hooker was perfect last weekend. As Virginia Tech takes a look at the standings and into November and knows who they get a chance to play, are you buying the fact that Virginia Tech, given what they are offensively, still has a legitimate, really legitimate chance to make it to Charlotte and be in the ACC championship game?
Guys, I so want to, but I can't trust which team's going to show up every week. I don't know which Virginia Tech is going to be on the field from one week to the next. And they are a team that can look really, really, really good. And then you watch them another week and you're just scratching your head saying, how is this team that team? And I don't know why that is or how you iron it out. I agree with you. I think Hendon Hooker is, you know, gives them a shot. They're good enough at all the spots to be in the discussion and I think be involved in a championship game type of scenario. Because I'm looking across the rest of the league. You've got the two losses from North Carolina. Miami's coming off of a bye week, and I think maybe you could argue that Miami right now is your most sound choice. We'll see what happens with Notre Dame versus Clemson. But when Virginia Tech is playing really good, I'm not so sure I wouldn't say they're the team that I would take number two or three in the league behind Clemson right now.
It's an interesting discussion. The Hokies are just kind of, you know, the way the season has gone for them, Pack, it's almost like they're just kind of hanging in there, and now all of a sudden they're going to get these premium games in the month of November. They lost the Carolina game, upset at Wake Forest, and now all of a sudden Virginia Tech's one of those teams that gets Clemson in November or December, actually, right? I mean, it's kind of sitting there for Virginia Tech to be a factor in this. Carolina has the two losses. Florida State, Virginia kind of keeps them alive. We got Miami playing a big ball game Friday night against NC State, kind of an unknown there. You know, the way the season goes, you kind of linger on this Clemson-Notre Dame thing and remember that you got to kind of remind yourself of these other teams that are still in the race, Mark.
Yeah.
By the way, Tom, do you trust – again, Miami's in a good spot, to be honest with you. I mean, they're sitting there. They got two teams in front of them. But, you know, they got games of note, but they also have a road trip Friday night in Raleigh. Do you trust Miami to be able to win out?
Greatest question of the day. I what would prove to you that you truly could? And I think that that's a question that you can't answer. You can only answer on a week-to-week basis with them. Notoriously, they have not come off of bye weeks very well. Right. They're not running the football very well. I think that's got to get shored up first and foremost. They've got to get back to being able to effectively run the football. Again, it's the bye week scares me a little bit with them. But if they're able to run the football, to get to your answer, your question, if they're able to run the football, then yeah, I think maybe they could. I think they've got the athletes to do it. With each and every week that they show that they can deal with the success of the previous week or that they can come off of a layoff and still play to a high standard, the more trust that I will have in them. Because I think that's been my biggest beef with Miami over the last several years is they scratch the surface and you kind of get teased a little bit and then you get let down. So with every single week that they don't let you down, then my confidence level goes up significantly. And listen, Dave Dorn's been exceptional in night games at home. All right, they've been really good. You've got a defense in NC State that can cause some problems. That scheme can create some issues for an offensive line. It's a Friday night, by the way, for both teams that had to take Tuesday off because of the election. So you got a disjointed week with limited time on the field. So there's a lot of storylines in this one that I think are going to be interesting.
All right. I have Florida State Pittsburgh on Saturday with Roddy Jones. I have a question. Jordan Travis is the quarterback. Chubba Purdy, mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago, came in at the end of the game and was 0-for-9. First time we'd really seen him play, Luke's.
Yeah.
What is your expectation for Mike Norvell's final four ball games of the regular season, given the quarterback situation and kind of given where that team is? And, oh, by the way, he's playing a Pitt defense now without arguably its emotional leader who's opted out for the rest of the year.
You know, my assessment of Florida State going forward is no matter what they try to do, they're going to be working around the quarterback position and the offensive line. And it's not going to be pretty, and you're going to have mistakes, and you're going to have turnovers, and you're going to have to come up with a way to work around it. I don't know if it's possible. I think we've seen that all year long. Purdy is a talented kid, but welcome to college football. You know, it's a big leap from the high school ranks, especially when you're on a team right now where things aren't going well. You don't have good mojo. You don't have good chemistry. Everybody's probably questioning what's going on. You got new staff and fingers are pointing. That's not healthy. So I don't think that helps the growth of the freshman quarterback. But what Mike Norvell obviously has to determine as a head coach and a leader of the offense is which guy will ultimately long-term give us the best chance to win. If we think Purdy is the guy that we're going to invest in and the offense is going to revolve around, then let's play him, let him take his lumps, let him learn, let him have some highs, deal with the lows, and find out if he is your guy. Because I don't know how much you're salvaging otherwise. You've tried Blackman, you've tried Travis. You know what the other issues are around the football team. You know the defensive disappointments when you consider the caliber of the player they have on that side of the ball and the lack of production. So I say throw Purdy in there, see what happens, but understand that you might not see an immediate difference in results. In fact, you might see every bit as many errors, but maybe it's a case study along the way for what you're hoping the future to be.
Tom, the ACC team that does not have a number beside their name that's playing better than everybody is Wake Forest. Ooh. And Dave Clawson again is proving what a great coach he is. And it's just amazing to watch them develop as the year goes on. And it happens, it's seemingly every year. But the Deacs, I don't think there's going to be anybody excited to see Wake Forest on their schedule in November and December.
We talked about this, 2 to 3 weeks ago, man. They are, and listen, in the pandemic, with COVID, with the offseason, the limited training camp, no spring, your winter conditioning's been interrupted. They are the one team in this conference that would be most affected in a negative manner because they are a developmental program that relies on upperclassmen. They rely on established experience in bringing their young guys along slowly. Well, you lose Jamie Newman. You lose Surratt on the outside. All right. Now you've got some injuries. You have COVID hit you. You have the Notre Dame game postponed, yet all the while you're still practicing, you're still developing. You said the word, develop. And there may not be a coaching staff or a program in America that does as good a job of that as Wake Forest does. And, you know, this isn't like, you know, if a Wake Forest has a COVID outbreak and they have something happen with their quarterback, they don't have a DJ to put in there. All right. And that's true at every position across the board for the most part. So it really gives you an idea of how far this team has come in a short amount of time with players that they were never expecting to have to play significant football with this fall.
Yep. Always great to catch up with you, Luke's. Thanks, man. Be well. We'll see you soon.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Got word last night, Virginia and Louisville postponed. They will play next week. But, Wes, we had a little encounter yesterday after the show with another Wahoo player that is really having some kind of year.
Yeah, I mean, a guy who is not only the tackle leader in the ACC, but a year ago had less than 30 tackles, and quite frankly, 30 tackles is about two games worth of this right. campaign for Atlanta linebacker Nick Jackson, who has really expanded his role from just a guy to being the guy potentially on the Virginia defense. So long before we knew their ball game Saturday night was postponed, we've had a chance to visit with Nick Jackson yesterday and ask him about going from being a guy to being the guy.
I mean, just my teammates, my coaches, and just I think all last year I was just trying to prepare for this moment and just being thrown in last year. I kind of used the offseason as something to teach me what I need to work on.
The win against North Carolina snaps a four-game losing streak. I guarantee you the bed felt better, food tasted better, practice was better this week. I mean, you guys have put in unbelievable work. I mean, but you got to get some satisfaction, right? Eventually you got that W. How big a deal was that Saturday night?
Oh, it was a huge deal. I mean, when every time you step on the field, you want to win. Just so the past four games, I mean, haven't gone the way we wanted them to go. But just to get the win meant a whole bunch for the boys.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we were just talking about you and being the ACC's tackle leader. It's not like Zane Zandier and Charles Snowden are that far behind you. You three guys are kind of the stern of the wheel there a little bit. What's it been like, the competitive level with the three of you guys this year?
I mean, we're always just trying to all get to the ball, and that's what our coaches are preaching to. So, I mean, when we're on the field, it's a race to the ball. Everyone's trying to get there. And having a guy like Zane and Charles next to you just pushes you even further.
Nick, the win over Carolina after the frustration, and now, as Pac was talking about, with Louisville coming to town, this season's been so different and so unique into itself just from a preparation standpoint. Now that you're in season, do you almost kind of attack this back half with renewed confidence after the win over Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, each week's a new week for us, so we're going to attack each week like we want to win the game and just come out and try and come out and beat Louisville this week, just like we came out and tried to beat North Carolina.
I want to go back, though, this week. I mean, obviously, you beat North Carolina Saturday, but this has been a strange and different week, too. We have a national election on Tuesday. No practices. We've talked so much during the summertime of student-athletes taking ownership of racial issues and everything else in this country. You guys have been very outspoken, doing an incredible job. What was Tuesday like on your team, given what's going on in our country?
I think Tuesday, I mean, we had a day off from practice, workouts, all that. So, I mean, everyone just kind of had time for their individual, like, reflection on what was going on, whether they wanted to vote, whether they wanted to get out inside the city and help out with things. But everyone pretty much had whatever individual choice they wanted to do.
Nick, when you look at this year with all the landscape of things that have happened, not only what Mark was just talking about from the activation of students across the country, young people who clearly wanted to be part of this process, to just what it's taken to play, what have you learned? What kind of experience do you think that has been that will help you going forward?
I mean, it takes a lot just to play, and I think that it was just for the love of the game. And I think we have a bunch of guys who really love this game and really want to play. So, I mean, we're just excited to be out here every day and just grateful to be out here on the field every day because, I mean, we're just playing football. And that's a fun game to play and exciting to play. And every week's just a new challenge.
I want you to brag about the other linebackers you got on here between Charles and Zane. What characteristic do they have that you thought or wished you had in your game? You pick.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I think probably length. They're both a lot taller than me, so I mean, just the length in their game, just having longer arms and stuff like that, I mean, definitely is an advantage that they have that I kind of wish I had part of my game.
How do you think they would answer that question about your skills?
I have no idea. Who knows what they would say?
All right. I kind of want to go. I want to go with another angle on this with you. Charles has worn 11, and I know the whole Bronco Mendenhall number process and things like that. We've had some fun with it on this show because Lindell wears 36, and you got two quarterbacks wearing 98 and 99, right? But yeah. You wear 6, and you're a young guy wearing a single digit. There are not too many young guys out there running around in single digits. How did you get to 6? How did you choose 6? And was anybody surprised that Zane chose 0?
I was not surprised when Zane chose 0 because he told me he was going to. But, I mean, 0 is just a cool number for sure. But I think that just getting number 6 was kind of an honor. And I think a bunch of the guys just, like, after the off-season workouts, they just – picked me at that number, and it was honestly just really an honor for them to do that for me. But
Nick, the
so the upperclassmen gave you the number?
They didn't give me the number.
Gave you the number?
They didn't give me the number, but they just kind of they chose me in a selection where I had the opportunity to get that number, and I thought that it was really just an honor for them to do that for me.
Nick, going back to Saturday. You know, you guys are up 3 touchdowns. It's on you guys now to close the deal. North Carolina's really explosive. They come back. You knew they're going to make somewhat of a run. All of a sudden, it's 4th down. Inside 2 minutes, and you're thinking, oh, my God. Got to get my helmet, man. We're going back out there. We got to close the deal. Fake punt time. Bronco Mendenhall pulls the fake punt on his side of the 50. The emotion on that sideline, when, number one, you saw that being the call, and then the execution for the 1st down, and guys close it out by taking a knee. But from a defensive guy's standpoint on that sideline, knowing what was at stake with 2 minutes to go, what was that like?
Well, I mean, it was crazy because, I mean, I was on the fake punt, so I was blocking. So, I mean, just like the call, it was a great call. I mean, it had worked in practice all week. So, I mean, we were really confident in KT. And, I mean, he's just a dynamic player who really can get the job done at any part of the field.
So no doubt, right?
All right,
when
Nick,
you heard
wanna...
the call, wait, Wes. When you heard the call, Nick, you're telling me, hey, worked all week, man. North Carolina got no idea what's coming. I mean, you're telling me that you had no doubt that that was going to work.
I had full confidence in KT. I mean, he's a playmaker. He's a football player. I mean, he just makes plays. But, I mean, if it didn't work out, we were going to go back out there. I mean, there's nothing we could do about it. So let's go out there and play the rest of the game. Hmm.
Nick, I've had fun going back and looking at the other punt plays in the game prior to the fake punt. And I know Keaton was a key in that, right? That Keaton had not been out there for any other punts, and he comes out as kind of the up. There had been 2 other guys who lined up as up backs, and then I think Keaton was the 3rd different guy to line up in that particular spot. Were you out there too for the other punts?
Yeah, I was out there for all the punts.
Okay. So it's specifically not – we're not trying to give away everything here, but Keaton was the – that was the key guy in the switch, huh?
No, yeah, Keaton – I mean, there's just – I'm just out there on all the punts.
Nick's like, man, I'm just out there to hit somebody. You know, whatever happens behind me happens behind me. I'm just going to put a hat on a hat here,
cover
man.
Cover some punts and get out there. Come on.
I love it.
I love it. That's awesome.
Nick, during your career at the University of Virginia, we ask this to every student athlete. What has been the hardest course that you've had at Virginia?
The hardest course, it's probably this calculus course that I'm in right now. It's pretty challenging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wes, you can relate to that.
Absolutely. And this guy, remember this pack, Nick Jackson went to Lovett. Now, this is not your regular, you know, he didn't go to Apex High School like I did. He went to, like, Lovett now. So when he says calculus is hard, that's the real calculus up there, isn't it, Nick? It's real calculus.
Yeah, that's the real deal.
I wasn't aware there was a difference between real calculus and fake calculus. Wes, do you want to break that down for us? Because that's news to me. I've never heard of such a thing.
You're talking – Nick, let me just tell you this. I'm not the math guy, and that's why he's laying this on me. Because math was my Achilles in the worst possible way from the, like, 5th grade on. So it's a long, sorrowful tale about me and math. But – Calculus, man, I just shudder thinking about that.
I was hoping that you could break that down, because if Nick found out there's such a thing as a fake calculus, he might want to look into the curriculum there at the University of Virginia and say, hey, you know what? If that's offered, I'd sign up for that too. But you can't cut any courses at Virginia now. This is a real deal.
That is true.
Yeah, I mean, come on, Nick. Nick knows Virginia now. They got real calculus. That's not that other kind of calculus that maybe goes some other places, but they got real calculus at Virginia. They got real calculus at Lovett, too, by the way, Pac, in Atlanta. I promise you, Lovett's got real calculus.
Yeah, it's just Elon that doesn't have the real calculus. That's what we're finding out.
Easy. Why you want to go down the alma mater trail? Everybody's good. We're all good, Pac.
I hear you. Appreciate Nick joining
us. Fun to be with Nick Jackson, wasn't it?
Sure. Yeah, good dude and good player. Boy, he's having a great year.
And we almost got him to tell us the secret to the fake punt, didn't we? We almost got our first little bit of breaking news there, Pac.
I'm glad that he didn't, because Bronco would have been all over us. Bronco would not have been happy with us had we gotten that.
Yeah.
Packer and Durham.
Wes, we still have some business to attend to. Before David joins us.
Absolutely. Number one Clemson, of course, doesn't have Trevor Lawrence on Saturday night when they visit Notre Dame. But that isn't stopping Dabo Swinney from being confident about the Tigers' chances against number four Notre Dame. Tom Rinaldi, ahead of the ball game, was able to sit down virtually, of course, and talk to the Tiger head coach as he prepares to lead his team into Notre Dame Stadium.
Trevor Lawrence will miss his second straight game this Saturday. It might be the biggest game of the year.
The playoff implications in this one are massive.
Dabo Swinney, probably as good as any coach, rallies his team around adversity.
What was the first conversation you had with Trevor once he found out he had tested positive?
I got a call from our trainer to let me know, and first thing I did was I walked down the hall to let Tony know what was going on, and then I said, all right, I'm going to reach out to DJ first. And he said, well, DJ's actually in the quarterback room. I just passed him. He's in there watching tape. So I went in and told DJ, you know, what was going on, and then I called Trevor. I mean, typical Trevor. Oh, man, coach. You know, I mean, he was disappointed, and I just wanted to make sure, first of all, he was okay, and he was, but it was a good conversation. I just, you know, told him, take care of yourself. Let's make sure you're good. Love you. Hey, we'll step up for you. It is what it is, but he'll be there, and he'll be Coach Lawrence. I know he'll be a good comfort for the guys, and will support DJ during the game.
To the end zone, touchdown Clemson. This young freshman quarterback is putting on a show when they needed him to step up.
How does the offense change, if at all, with DJ?
Yeah, not at all. We don't change anything. I mean, like day one, I was so impressed with him in his absorption. And so I knew pretty quickly that, hey, this kid is special from a mental standpoint, football IQ. He just has this really poised demeanor, and what a great attribute for a quarterback. He's a very unique guy, just like Trevor was, you know, just like Deshaun was at this stage in their careers as far as their mentality, their mental makeup. The mindset, poise, confidence, demeanor. There's nothing that Trevor could do as far as running our offense that he can't do, whether it be types of passes, types of runs, et cetera. Obviously, there's a difference in experience and whatnot, but as far as the mechanics of it, it's the same.
Devil, how would you describe the opportunity Saturday?
What a cool opportunity as far as going on the road and playing the top five team. Those opportunities are rare. I mean, anytime you go on the road, you know it's going to be really difficult to win. But for us, it's just, again, it's an opportunity hopefully to get to 8-0. And we can't punch our ticket to Charlotte, but it certainly helps you stay in control of your destiny within this conference. And whoever's out is not out of it by any stretch of the imagination, but you certainly like to, you know, come out of it undefeated.
He's right about that. Somebody's still going to have a zero in the loss column Saturday night, but should be in a tremendous game, and look forward to touching base with Dabo later this afternoon.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.